What is going on, everybody? Mike Curlin here from the Bases Load podcast. And just a reminder, for those who don't know, we have teamed up with Rotoballer this year for the 2020 season, which means we're joining the Rotoballer Radio Podcast Network. Since 2013, Rotoballer has been grinding away, providing millions of fantasy baseball players their fix for in-depth MLB analysis and player news. If you haven't heard, Rotoballer's 2020 draft kit is live, and all Bases Loaded listeners can get 10% off Rotoballer's draft kit by using discount code BASESLOADED. Rotoballer is home to number one fantasy pros accuracy ranker Nick Mariano. Nick's 2020 rankings and projections are available as part of Rotoballer's draft kit, along with printable cheat sheets, draft sleepers and busts, and more than 300 2020 player outlooks, and tons of in-season tools. All of this from Rotoballer is available for 10% off with discount code BASESLOADED. Just go to rotoballer.com/basesloaded and get your draft kit today.
And they're walking him with the bases loaded, an intentional walk to Barry Bonds.
2-2 with the bases loaded and one out.
Oh my God!
Deep to right field, way!
Hello and welcome in, everybody, to episode 121 of the Bases Loaded Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Curland. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike_Curland. As always, I'm joined by one of my co-hosts, and Chris Clegg. You follow him on Twitter at RotoClegg. But enough about us. We brought in a very special guest. We have Eno Saris of The Athletic, co-host of Rates and Barrels, and let's be honest, he's lover of all things beer and sandwiches, and now dogs, which we saw beautiful dogs, fun little puppies. I'm sure you're having a blast. You mentioned a little bit that they've been keeping you up. But other than that, you know, thank you for joining us. And how's everything going?
It's going good. It's Friday. There's a bunch of really fun games on the slate. Padres, Astros, Reds, Cardinals. I think it's going to be a good weekend. Too bad we don't get Mets, Yankees. But there's plenty of other good baseball in the sea.
No, for sure. Baseball is good, period, when we have it, period. Like, that's the thing. Because, I mean, going without it for so long. And honestly, I mean, it's almost like a new normal we're adjusting to, but that's a whole nother discussion. We're here to be happy, be positive.
Yeah, we are. But I will say that fantasy baseball has been really difficult this year.
Oh, that's actually part of this we're talking about today. We're talking about a little bit of strategy, a little bit of how you've adjusted. And my thing is not even just fantasy baseball, but analysis.
Yeah,
because this whole season, 60 games, everyone keeps saying small sample size. It is. But 60 games as well, like 60 games as a whole is a small sample. We've seen what Bellinger first half, MVP second half, be like better, just, you know, a little better than the average and stuff like that. So we're not sure. We're riding peaks and valleys. And this is a year just to ride the hot hand. That's pretty much where I'm at. But Chris, hey, buddy, you're here. I'll let you say hi.
What's up, Mike? And I'm glad to be on, man. A special honor to be here with Eno today. So thank you for joining us.
Yeah. And I always remind people, Chris has that, you know, that little Southern to his voice. He brings that little mellow, cool, calm we need, because I'm high energy. Chris is that cool, you know, lower energy guy, roll laid back. And then Eno's right in the middle. It's a perfect mix today.
I grew up in Atlanta, so I'm somewhere in between. That's right. Did 10 years in New York. There you go. There you go. Nice.
So yeah, I'm about 2 hours from Atlanta.
Who's your team, Eno?
I don't have one, man. My first team was the Braves, because I grew up there from 80. I'm an immigrant. I came in 86, and I came to Atlanta, and I lived there until about 94. I was going to high school up in Boston and still living in Atlanta. So basically 86 to 97, like, called Atlanta home. So that was a good time to be watching the Braves. But at the same time, by the time I went up to high school in 94, like, the Braves had won and people were calling them the Buffalo Bills and all that stuff. And that was annoying. And the Red Sox had never won, you know? So I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. I'm going to watch some Red Sox games and kind of root for the Red Sox. And then they won. And I went out to school in California, and my dad had been living in California for a while. And I was like, oh, these Giants, I like Barry Bonds. This guy's a pretty good player. And so I was there until like 2002. And I was like, you know, I got to see them in the World Series. And then I moved to New York and I was like, well, screw the Yankees. I'm going to be a Mets fan. I don't know why I chose the Mets for some reason.
Whoops.
But I mean, they made it to the World Series while I was there too. So I was a bit of a lucky charm for some of those teams. But I just generally, I didn't have enough money to like buy the TV packages. They didn't really exist. So a lot of when I moved a lot. And every time I moved, I was just basically like, you know, what's on TV? You know, who's playing? So who
are you watching a lot of these days then? Just every
now I have the package.
Yeah. I was gonna say, never mind. Wait a minute. The availability, you're watching everything. And I've come to realize, like, although I am a Marlins fan, it's like I don't let my fandom get in the way of my analysis. I've taken that part out of it. But I've learned to just enjoy baseball for what it is. Like, the Padres are so much fun to watch.
Yeah, and I've watched a lot of them.
And it's fantastic. And I'm learning to enjoy I think it's almost like normal when you grow up playing baseball, you learn to just enjoy the hitting side of things. But as I've gotten older, maybe it's like part of maturing as an adult, which I'll never be an adult. I'm always going to be a kid at heart. But pitching, I've actually learned to really enjoy watching pitching, because there's a transition there of like respecting that side of the ball, respecting that side of the game.
But I started in Atlanta. So, man, like I was always about pitching. It's like I got to see what was so cool about being there during that time is seeing like guys who ended up being like icons of pitching, right? You know, like, and not just icons of pitching, like, oh, they were all power pitchers and they're Hall of Famers. Like, they were different. Like, Maddox was like, you know, placing the ball, tons of bend. Smoltz was just like, you know, power. Smoltz was like, I think, like the modern pitcher, you know, real, I bet you had a high spin rate, just, you know, like real nice velocity, pitch at the top of the zone, you know, pitched off that with the slider and then developed a splitter. So, like, you know, I thought I always liked Smoltz the best because I thought in the postseason you wanted Smoltz because he was going to throw harder and he was going to strike guys out. In the postseason, you didn't want Glavin because Glavin depended on the umpire the most. You know, Glavin was like outside, further outside, even further outside, you know, so you kind of needed the umpire to go along with him. So anyway, I've kind of come at it from a pitching angle, I think mostly because of Atlanta.
And do you think that's kind of transitioned, again, watching them and being so enamored by those pitchers, kind of transitioned you into being such, like, I noticed like a lot of your analysis is on pitching and you cover pitching so well. And is that kind of maybe where it started, just being enamored?
I think so. Since you have to draft both sides of the team, and I've done a lot of research on hitting and tried to identify undervalued hitters and stuff like that. So I don't think that I like don't appreciate hitting at all. But I think that it sort of started a little bit with Smoltz, Avery, Glavin, and Maddox.
See, I think for me, it's always been easy. Hitters analysis on hitters have always been easier for me. I think pitching takes you a different, it's like takes the next step at another level to really truly like kind of get into it with especially in today's game where there's so much to the pitcher analysis with spin rates, with command. Well, and I know you have command plus and all that.
No, but I think it's really interesting because projections are worse for pitchers than hitters. So like to some extent with hitters, you can be a little bit more like, you know, what did the projections say? You know, like, you know, was he done? You know, that's changed a little bit in the Statcast era, but like, it's still very, like, mostly true. But pitchers, like, projections are bad for pitchers. And also there's also something weird, like hitters give you a little bit of information every day, right?
Yeah.
Pitchers give you a lot of information every 5 days. So you kind of like have a long time to kind of stare at these numbers and be like, what's happening here? You know, what's going to happen in 5 days? So,
No, you're right. And I feel like in a shortened season, it's heightened because I think every pitcher goes right to like the tape, goes right to the information they have handed to them. And they turn that into, okay, well, I did this against this team, it was successful, but instead of sticking with this, this team seems susceptible to this, I'm going to change my approach for this game. So the data is kind of, I feel like the data is even more noisier than usual in a shortened season.
Yeah,
possibly. Yeah. I'm saying maybe not. I know some players are sticking to their new pitch mixes and all that, but I feel like there could be a chance for that noisy data to be here in a shortened season. Yeah. But before we dive into that, because we're going to talk a little bit about this and just how your analysis might be changing in season, how did you even get started into all this?
I wrote for a site called Fantasy Lounge Sports, which was really a poorly named site. It sounds a little bit like a strip club. and I think there actually was a strip club called the Fantasy Lounge.
Oh man, fantastic.
We had like an SEO battle with. I wrote a piece.
Must have been a popular one.
I wrote a piece for them about Kevin Moss and age at level, and wrote about basically like why could we have seen Kevin Moss bust coming, you know, like what about Kevin Moss should we have seen coming? Because Kevin Moss was this guy who like came in and hit like 25 homers in his rookie season. And there were like these women taking their tops off every time he hit a homer in Yankee Stadium. And like, it was like this whole phenomenon. And then he just like fell apart after that. And part of that was just that he was old, you know, he kind of came into the league at 27 or 26 or something and just was at his peak and had his best year and then just fizzled. And so I use that to say that Matt LaPorta, he was a guy who was traded to the Indians a while back, that he probably wasn't going to be any good. And I named a couple other guys that were younger and didn't have as good stats as LaPorta, but would be better. It turned out to be good calls. There's boobs in the story. I think it was a decent piece. And then that got me a Fantasy Sports Writers Association Piece of the Year award. Nice. And that just got me on some radars. I got a little gig at Fangraphs writing for Rotographs, and I got a little gig at this place called Fanball, and then that turned into Amazing Avenue on SBN. So I was writing about the Mets. And basically, you know, you were talking about the hustle before we got on. Like, I just said yes to everything at first. And I just, you know, my wife was pretty annoyed, and I got a lot of support from her because we would sit on the couch watching TV together, and I'd just be like keyboard warrior, you know, just come home from work and just write. And she was my rock at the time. And so, I did all that. And then at some point, got hired to Bloomberg Sports, and, they were paying like $50 a blog post. So I was like, whoa,
like I'm to start blog posting
big time, dude. I'm into this $50 a post. And I just thought that might, you know, that with some other gigs. And then I was going to do some editing for MLB.com. I was going to put it all together and just like try to make it work. And then I just got the call from David Appelman at Fangraphs to be the full-time editor at Rotographs. And that changed my life. So
that's awesome. I remember that's actually like, I just got into the fantasy, like just listening. I was more or less like the service stuff, like CBS and stuff for a long time. And then the first time I ever heard of you was when you were on the podcast over there on Super on the Bus with obviously you are, you know, with Paul.
Sure, yeah.
And that was my introduction to you. And ever since then, it's been like you guys were the guys that kind of made me want to dive more into all this, because you guys just always brought those stats. I'm like, what are these things? What are these numbers? This is like French to me. And it drove me to want to learn more, but you did it in a very approachable way. You did it in a way that didn't seem so daunting, because you would take it and kind of regurgitate it for both the smarter crowd, or the more analytically driven crowd, I should say, and for the more common fan. And that's why I've always kind of tried to take that my approach, my analysis. And I thank you for guys like you and Paul and others for kind of setting that precedence and allowing for people like me to kind of take that style and run with it. Cause that's been my big thing, is trying to make it in a way that people can understand it, no matter what level of understanding you have towards those numbers.
Yeah. My old career was in educational publishing. So I used to write workbooks for like 3-year-olds. So I'm actually now writing for a slightly higher level of mental acuity.
Debatable. If you ask for why, that's very debatable.
My sentences are longer than 3 words now. So
yeah,
but I just thought, I just thought that that was good practice for trying to make things understandable. And that's, you know, I had a friend who once told me, like, you know, we're not smart enough to be the smartest people in the room, but we can translate for them.
Yeah, that's really. And honestly, I still have so much to learn, and I plan on, you know, this is what's awesome about this industry and this sport. There's always more to learn, especially in the day and age of analytics. Yeah. And you've been around since before analytics were really accepted or even put into the game for the most part.
I think I was at just the sort of beginning of it. I mean, I was reading Fangraphs and Baseball Prospectus, so there were guys doing it there. But one thing that was a little bit different back then, you know, when I was starting out writing in sort of 2008-ish, was that the people who were writing and researching were doing it for regular baseball, you know, for just being baseball fans. And there weren't a ton of people taking that research and making it fantasy applicable. So that's what I've always done. And I think it's still what I do. Like, I do some research, but my research is not as good as the top level guys, like at BP and Fangraphs and other places, Baseball HQ. A lot of the people who do the original research, like some of that stuff is amazing. Alex Chamberlain, Jonathan Judge, you know, a lot of these stuff that they do is amazing. Which if you read their stuff, a lot of times what they do is they do a bunch of research and they say, well, there's nothing here. and so I kind of skip that step and take what they have when they do find something really impressive. Sometimes go to the players and ask them about it, or go to coaches and ask them about it. Try to expound on that, maybe do a little bit of light research on top of it. So, you know, I think one of the ways that people can kind of separate themselves from the pack is reading. That's the one thing that I did a lot of, and that I think was always served me well. And I think that I hear from you is, you know, it's reading. You read, and over time you'll find your own voice and either your own research or your own way of sort of implementing the analysis that's out there, the data that's out there.
And that's the route I've went. I, like you mentioned, I'm never going to be, I know personally, like you just have to know, you're not gonna be like, I know I'm not gonna be the smartest guy in the room. I talk to guys like Ariel Cohen and others are like, you know, really into the numbers, understand the analysis and the data. And my goal is to be really good at taking, like you said, taking what they found and applying it. And so far that's been my strength. And again, it's all about assessing your strengths and weaknesses. I understand that. And it's just, but it's awesome because there's just so much out there. I feel like you don't realize how much there is out there until you start diving in and then you realize it's its own rabbit hole of just craziness. Chris, I mean, you're relatively new to the industry. You've been hustling just as hard as anybody, man. It's been impressive. How have you kind of adjusted to all this? And what do you think about what Eno's saying?
Yeah. I haven't talked much. I'm just soaking it all in, but good stuff. Again, like Mike mentioned, I just started in this in March. So this is like all of a brand new world for me. Like, I've been a longtime fantasy player, but really just diving in on the research and doing the writing part is new. And so, like you mentioned, like looking up to people like you, you know, and others who have like done it before and do it so well. And it's tough. Like, it's tough to find your niche, but when you do, like, I think, like you mentioned, that's when you can kind of take off. And like Mike's been kind of grinding on his lineup stuff, and that's really gone a long way in the breakdowns on Twitter, which are great. And so like, I love numbers, but I'm not going to be one of those guys, like you mentioned, that can like Cohen, who just has all these crazy numbers in his head and makes them work, but finding a way to make it like applicable, I guess. And so that's kind of what I'm working through and trying to get a voice and just give something applicable to other fantasy players and readers of my work. And I just want to be able to help them in like any way that I can. And so like, it's just, it can be tough sometimes to kind of figure out your place. And so that's kind of still where I am right now, still being new in it and trying to figure out where I belong in the midst of all of this. But man, it's been a great ride. I love doing this, man.
Yeah. It's a really great community too. It's true.
And, you know, I mean, I guess, like I said, I got a chance to meet you for a brief moment. First Pitch Florida was crazy. And my first time ever going to one of those events.
Right before the shutdown and everything, right, too.
Well, it makes you wonder how many people there had it, to be honest. Because, I mean, there's no way it was COVID-free. Let's be honest there. There's a couple hundred people there. But anyway, regardless of that fact, it was just mind-blowing because what I did, I used that experience to meet a lot of people. And since then, I've expanded on my relationships with them. But it's just like, it was so awesome to meet all these people. And the best thing I could say is, and I've said this about you as well, is just that you guys truly are as nice as you are, like in like as nice as you come off and as respectable you come off, you know, on Twitter and behind the scenes, in person, you guys have all been that way. And it's kind of nice to see an industry full of people that have been doing this for such a long time be still that, like, you know what I mean? Like approachable and likable and honestly, just someone coming up and doing this right now, it's another way of just saying thank you for being that way. Thank you for being so approachable and thank you for being willing to help out.
We all started out like you're starting out. We all just, you know, played and just wanted to win. You know, here's something that people don't really know. Fangraphs was started by David Appleman so he could win his fantasy league.
There you go.
Like, you know, we're all just trying to win leagues, right? I also just think that there's something about baseball that's like really conducive to, like, I call it like the sort of sit down and have a beer sport. You know, the the cadence and the pace of baseball is different than other sports. You can look away, you can have a conversation, you can have an argument, you can have like a statistical argument. I think that's the basis of a lot of these sort of things that we do, was, almost began in the, like, sitting in the stands being like, who's better, this guy or that guy. That's how it all started. And since we all have that in common, no matter where you are, who you are, who you're standing with, you can just start arguing who's better, this guy or that guy. I think when you and I were sitting there talking, I think we just basically pointed at the draft board that was going on, and we're like, which team do you like?
And there was just and that's the thing. It's you can Super go into like a conversation. You can go into a 3-hour conversation about that because every team has its strengths and weaknesses, players this, player that, player A. It's amazing. I love it. And you're right. Yeah. And it's just a natural, that's why I said it's like intimate, because there's an intimacy to it in terms of just how much natural like conversation and just that, like how quick you become comfortable with people. And it's amazing. That experience was mind blowing. And I'm going to go back if they can open it back up next year. That's obviously, I'm hopeful for all that, but man, it was a great experience. But let's get back to some of this. Because I know you're a busy man, and I appreciate your time. As someone who's been doing this a long time, just this season's been absolutely crazy. We'll probably hopefully never see anything like this again. How has your in-season strategy changed?
Yeah, I lean, you could call it passive if you were being critical, or patient, because I think more than half of my leagues are dynasty and keeper leagues. And you just, if you think that a guy has shown it, and has a skill, you got to stick with them through the bad times. Like Ozzie Albies had a wrist injury. Like I was on Ozzie Albies, like the minute I saw his minor league stats and saw him play with all that energy, and I got him in all my keeper leagues, and I have like 5 shares of him in keeper leagues, and he's powered me to titles and this and that. He's just not going to, you would never drop him, even in a short season like this. If somebody was like, "Oh, what's wrong with Ozzie Albies?" You'd be like, "Yeah, he's probably hurt. Look, he's hurt." But you wouldn't long term. You wouldn't sell Ozzie Albies right now just because of what happened this year. But the problem is, in a redraft league, in this season, you kind of got to be more aggressive, and you kind of have to work faster, and you have to decide who's droppable quicker, and you kind of have to just move as quick as you can. And that's a little bit unnatural for me. So it's been pretty difficult, but there are some ways that you can kind of use the stats to look into it.
Well, and that kind of jumps right into the next part of just, because we talked about it. I think this was off air, is just 60 games as a whole is a small sample, period.
Right.
It is. It's a small sample size, but how, what type of data, if any, are you taking away right now that is kind of stickier, maybe, or stuff that you're looking at in players as a whole that's helping you with this analysis and helping you buy in or sell on said players?
Yeah, actually, by the way, your lineup stuff is really important in this short season, because one of the things that's so frustrating about this season is like, A, you don't even know who's playing tonight.
No,
that's been really difficult. And then B, just the different lineup situations that they've done with longer benches. There've been more sort of borderline players. I'm thinking about like Jake Cronenworth before he kind of started playing every day. Mm-hmm. You kind of have to like look at the lineup every night and be like, is Cronenworth in the lineup? Like
a lot of platoons,
a lot of like extra guys that kind of super utility guys. There's teams that have like 2 super utility guys. You're like, wow, mm-hmm. That's crazy. So that's been, so lineup stuff is really important. I think just who's in the lineup tonight is actually an underrated question, that like is really important in your daily lineup leagues and in redraft, and not just DFS. DFS, everybody, they know that like, oh, who's in the lineup tonight is like part of the game. But also just in like in every league now, who's in the lineup tonight, is that's a stat. That's like a thing. And it's really important.
At bats.
Because we're all behind pace in all of our leagues, whenever it has that little like breakdown where it's like where you're projected, how many at bats you're supposed to get per position, we're all behind pace and we're all just trying to like chase, make sure we make those targets. But the other stuff that becomes meaningful in small samples that I look at is sort of pitch velocity, max exit velocity. Well, let me just do pitchers first. Pitch velocity and pitch mix changes, I think, are huge. You look at someone like Pablo Lopez, just has a new cutter. I didn't see it going in because he had like middling command and stuff numbers. He did have okay velocity, but the fastball straight, he was doing mostly the four seam last year. Now he's kind of gone over to the sinker more. He's added a cutter, and the changeup has always been good. So now he has like kind of a better mix, like a wider mix. And once you see a mix change along with some peripheral stuff, like, oh, his strikeout rate is up, that's good. But his strikeout rate is up and he has a new pitch, that's gold. That's like, yeah. Oh, that's something different. Like Dylan Bundy, even like his home run rate is down. Well, that's partially because new park and maybe just sample. But also now he's throwing sliders 35% of the time, yeah. Instead of 20% of the time. That's meaningful.
Yeah.
So for pitchers, I'm way into velocity. Like James Paxton, we knew he was injured. You know, yeah. Charlie Morton, we knew he was injured. So anybody who's like down more than a tick, like 1 mile per hour, they had a short spring. Maybe they could get it back. But once you're talking about 2 or 3 ticks, like, basically everybody who was down 3 ticks, and there was a list at one point, is injured. So that's something that I was looking at early. Strikeouts minus walks is just now becoming something to look at. I just dealt away a couple shares of Dylan Cease today because he's got the 4th worst strikeout minus walk rate in baseball. And I've got these advanced stats like Command Plus that say he's the 2nd worst starting pitcher in baseball with Command. Oof. And I can look at, you know, pitch plots and say, whoa, he doesn't have a single swing and miss on his curveball because he throws them from people's, you know, above people's heads to their toes. Like, it's just the most scattershot thing you've ever seen. But in the end, you could also just say, hey, he doesn't strike out. He doesn't have a large enough gap between his strikeouts and walks. And that's something I've been doing actually since I just looked at box scores. The number one thing I would do when I looked at box scores in 2008 was look at the pitcher's strikeouts and walks. That's the only thing I would look at first.
I've realized, you know, and you read about all this research about how sticky that is, you know, that data. Mm-hmm. That's one of those things that is quick to stick and quick to show some improvement or decline.
One of the best in-season predictors of future success for pitchers is strikeouts minus walks. So, you know, so that's kind of my approach on the pitching side. On the hitting side, it's actually a little bit harder. Even though they're giving you more data as they're going along, and we're researching a lot of StatCast stuff, it's you can look at xWOBA, you can look at hard hit rate. I kind of like hard hit rate because it's just so simple. How many balls over 95 miles an hour do you hit? And it doesn't have this thing where like bunts can screw you up or whatever. It's like, it's just looking at how often you hit the ball 95. Like Victor Robles still has a decent hard hit rate, even though he bunts a lot, you know, like there's, but if you look at his average exit velocity, it looks terrible because he bunts a lot, and bunts are like 50 miles an hour. So, so I like hard hit rate, on StatCast hard hit rate. I'll look at xWOBA. Max exit velocity is really important for like a prospect. So if a prospect comes up and hits the ball like 115 miles an hour, that's huge. That just, it's almost like a pitcher coming up and touching 100. If a pitcher comes up and touches 100, like Nate Pearson comes up and throws 100, you got to take notice.
Yeah.
That is really, really important. And if a hitter comes up and hits the ball 150 miles an hour, even if everything else is kind of a problem, that's really important. So to some extent, even though Dylan Carlson is really struggling in a keeper league, I just put in like a huge offer to try and get him. I think Carlson will be okay. He's hit the ball hard, really hard a couple times, and I think that's meaningful. So, but at the same time, like when you look at somebody like Yelich, right? Like he could just have a bad year. I mean, like you said, 60 games, he could have just have like the beginning of Bellinger's season last year, the bad part of the, you know, like,
yeah, exactly.
He could just have that. He's striking out too much. He's hitting a lot of ground balls. It's hard to tell when he's going to get it going. To some extent, the longer you've been around, the more I just trust your track record, you know?
No, I 100% agree. And the track record, that's why it's like my big thing this year. Like I was on Justin Mason's Friends with Fantasy Benefits pod. And my big thing was I'm not trading Kyle Lewis for Pete Alonso right now. And it was for the, I know it's, and it's a bold take, but it was for the simple fact that Kyle Lewis is showing growth. He's running hot, and I don't have time, because this goes back to just how short the season is. We don't have time to gamble on somebody coming around. Now, since I said that, P. Alonso's hit a few home runs, and
but Lewis is getting a little bit cooler.
Yeah, but it was the simple fact that I just don't trust in buying low right now. Just for the simple fact that I don't believe in players having enough time to adjust. And there's other red flags with P. Alonso, mostly the batting average and all that. But that's a whole other discussion.
Yeah, he always had the strikeout rate. So
yeah, and the strikeout rate, it started in the second half. The problem is it carried over, and people were kind of like, "Well, he's not like, 'cause he hit 280, I think." First half last year, 235, second half. And people were like, oh, people bought into the fact that he might be closer to the 280. I'm like, no, he's probably gonna be like a 250. He's hitting about 250. And that's so I'm a big anti-Alonso guy for his draft day cost and, you know, in typical 5x5, because
you want a better average, you're picking in the second round.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm not trying to take Pete Alonso that early at all, but that's again a whole nother discussion. But my big thing, the one thing I've been doing a lot of, is looking for swing changes in this shortened season, or something to help explain some of these hot starters. Kyle Lewis was a big swing change guy. Like, he was the one that was the most noticeable coming in from last year to this year. Last year he was more crouched, had a lot of bat movement, was like leaning over the plate, and this year he's more upright, less bat movement, looks more poised at the plate. And you look at that and you pair that with a few less ground balls, still hitting too many for your liking,
But at that's it. Yeah, I was going to say ground ball rate. Ground ball rate is actually can be useful early on. You can use launch angle if you like, but, you know, ground ball per fly ball, that, you know, just look at that, and it's on Fangraphs and it's just right there. And if you see like a power increase, but it's accompanied, it's almost like the pitch mix thing, right? Mm-hmm. If you see different results and the pitch mix changed, boom. If you see different results and the ground ball rate changed, boom. That means they're doing something different.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Then it usually goes into, I actually look at ground ball rate. Then I look at launch angle. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. That pairs well. And then you see, are they pulling the ball more? Castellanos was pulling the ball more early on, putting the ball in the air more, and has the hit tool he has. We like, wow, he could be JD Martinez this year, especially with Reds, especially at Great America Small Park. So it's just like stuff like that. That's where I've been looking for, like, obviously pitch mixes for pitchers. And with hitters, I've just been looking for anybody who's made a tweak in their adjustment, and if it's sustainable. And I try to see if I could buy into sustainability or not. It's still a guess. We're trying to take the data the best we can in the shortened season and apply it towards a shortened season and hopefully predict future success or future reasoning for downfall. But again, it's like, it's just so much going on. Now let's get to some of these players that just maybe you've changed your mind on. We're going to do a little thing I like to call three up, three down. It's a new series I'm starting with guests, because it's kind of an easy, fun way to kind of talk about some players struggling or some players that may have surprised you and have done better. So we'll start on a high note. Let's go with up. Who's your first player that's kind of moved up for you?
Well, I bold predicted Kyle Lewis into Rookie of the Year. So
there we go.
I guess I'll use him. But I don't know. We're talking about position players, pitchers.
I honestly figured you were going to go pitchers. I could have specified. I apologize for not. I was kind of letting you kind of run with it, whichever direction you wanted to. I didn't want to just make you do pitchers, because I know you talk about pitchers a lot. I wanted to give you the freedom to kind of discuss any players up and down that you just noticed and reasons why.
Yeah, I mean, Dylan Bundy was a huge ascender in my ranks. Corbin Burnes was moved up really, really far. I'm trying to think of some names here off the top of my head, but why don't you go first, and I'll get my ranks up and see what I got.
Well, one of my guys that I was up on, we kind of just discussed about, was Kyle Lewis, and one of my guys I'm down on is Pete Alonso, and it's because you know what, I'll go with a different one that I kind of talk about him a little bit much, but it's Devers. He's been swinging a better bat of late, but you know, I've heard reports of him coming back into camp a little bit out of shape,
he's battled that shape.
Yeah, and last year he came in shape. This year he came in out of shape. And for me, I'm a big plate discipline guy. I love plate discipline. And the biggest thing I noticed from him last year was that his O-swing, which is, again, for people that might not know, is for how much you swing outside the zone, it was at 40.5 in 2019, which is really, really high, compared, especially the average being like around 30-31%. But his O-contact was also a career best at 71.9%. And my concern was, is if that took at all a dip, like in any direction, not any direction, if that took a dip negatively to meet what he's done prior, we're going to see the batting average be an issue. I never doubted the power. It was always, I don't think he's a 300 hitter. I just didn't. And this year we saw the O contact kind of dip down, but it's probably worse than what it looks like, because although it did dip down, his O swing went up 4.5% or 4%. So his own swing went up while the contact on pitches outside the zone have went down. That's led to more swing and miss. The swing strike rate's gone up in the process. And he's obviously, I think a part of him is just pressing. He's probably trying too hard to get out of it. So
well, when it comes to Devers, the O swing is also really interesting, because high O swing batters don't age well. I think the name that people should remember is Josh Hamilton. When you reach outside the zone, Pablo Sandoval too, if you reach outside the zone, contact on pitches outside the zone ages really terribly. As much as I like Devers, like, you know, from ages 23 to 28 or so, and there's a lot of players who can make it work during that time. Pablo Sandoval just hit a homer on a ball that was at his nipples. So, like, you know, that there is a skill there that you can take to the bank to some extent. It also means that they won't age well. And so if you like, to me, I know Devers and Sandoval are different players, but like there's a little bit of a similarity there in terms of like heavier players that reach a lot. Both of those things don't really lead to aging well. So as well, I do like him now. If you have that worry about someone that they might not age well, that does mean that there could be some bad season mixed in too.
Yeah. And I'm not saying he won't be good. I still don't think we've seen the power ceiling. I still think that there's still a good player there, but I just never bought into the four category floor that he was kind of being sold at.
The batting average, 8 stolen bases against 16 tries. That did not suggest that he was going to steal a lot of bases this year. So.
Yeah, and I think he only had one or two after like the All-Star break or something crazy. Like, he did most of it in the first half.
Yeah. I never expected stolen bases from him. I just did a pitcher 10 pack. I'm going to just cannibalize off that. A guy who's up for me is Justice Sheffield. I pointed out that he's got a pitch mix changed. He changed from a four seam to a sinker. And then with that came more command. It's, you know, a lot of people switch for the sinker for movement, but I think he's been just a natural sinker guy for most of his career. And once he moved to the sinker, he improved his command. So now he has got above average command, above average stuff. The secondaries are pretty good. So I don't necessarily think he's going to be like a top 30 or top 40 pitcher, but I think he can be like a top 50, top 60 pitcher this year. And that's useful. It's on a lot of wires. I just did a trade where I traded Dylan Cease and Cole Calhoun for Justice Sheffield and Josh Bell. And like, I don't know about Josh Bell, but I also think Cole Calhoun is just a kind of a platoon player that I don't trust, and I didn't trust Dylan Cease as far as I could throw him. So I was like, here, let me get this Justice Sheffield. And then a guy I'm down on, I guess I'm a little bit worried about Ross Stripling. He's got a new release point. And the slider has totally different movement, and he stopped using it as much. And the thing that Stripling is, since he's a 90 mile an hour guy, if you see a guy with 90 miles an hour, the second question should be, how many pitches does he have? Because you cannot survive like 90 miles an hour in two pitches. That's part of why Joey Lucchese is not a starting pitcher anymore. But Ross Stripling had the Hyunjin Ryu plan going, right? Which is, I have command of 4 pitches, and that's how I'm going to make it work. Well, now he has command of 3 pitches. It's not quite the same thing. And so I'm really looking for him either just to start throwing the slider more or to change the release point or something. And if he doesn't do that, I really like Tony Gonsolin. Alex Wood is getting healthy, and I just think Stripling might go right back to the bullpen.
When you say Alex Wood getting healthy, I always
like temporarily.
like, is that a joke or are you serious?
I mean, he's getting healthier. He might come back for a few starts and then go back on the DL.
Unfortunately, we hate to make it's not a laughing matter, unfortunately, but unfortunately, right. It kind of is. We get it. But Justice Sheffield's a guy I was really in on, dropped him really quick in my main event because I didn't want to. I've been kind of overreacting.
He was borderline going in. He's the kind of guy that if you move quickly on, you're like, whatever, I had to move quickly, but there's something there, I think.
yeah, I was in on him again in the preseason. Then that one, all it took was one start for me. Like, nah, I'm moving on, because I wanted to try to move off, you know, the waiver wire. And then I realized, because in the main event, not necessarily short benches, but no IL spots and stuff like that. You got to kind of turn and burn those final spots. I didn't want to get attached to him, but man, I wish I kind of held on to him, because I need pitching bad in my main. But another guy I'm down on, and I wanted to get your take on this, is I'm not sure about my long-term feels about him, but Vladdy, man, he's concerning. The guy can hit the ball, there's no question, but he puts a ton on the ground. Like, was it, last time I looked, it was 60%, and last time I saw him, he's not beating out pitches. So, like, on the ground, and he can hit. You mentioned how hard he hits the ball. That's fantastic, but it's not fantastic when you're hitting the ball directly into the ground. And I comped him recently, almost tongue in cheek, but the more I think about it, the more I talk about it, the more I say out loud, I'm buying into it. He's reminding me of a Prince Fielder who hits the ball on the ground instead of in the air.
Or Yandy Diaz without the biceps.
Yeah. and probably half the sprint speed.
Yeah. Yandy Diaz also is pretty good at the plate in terms of plate discipline and making contact. So there's a lot of Yandy Diaz in here right now. The hope, I think, is that over time he'll be able to raise the ball a little bit more. And Yandy did have a year where he did, you know, he raised the ball. He did lift it a little bit better. But in terms of this year, I don't know how much longer people want to wait around, because usually a new increase in fly ball rate has to do with like a swing change in the offseason. It has to do with a lot of like effort, and it's not something that you can usually do in the middle of a season. So, yeah, I don't think that necessarily, Guerrero is going to have like even league average power going forward because of this problem. And then on top of it, you know, sometimes hitting the ball hard steals power from you. He's had a couple hits in the last couple games where he's hit the ball so hard to the outfield that he only gets to first. Like, it just like got to the outfielder right away. The outfielder got it back in, and you like, oh, that's a double. Oh, I guess not.
it's not a double for him.
Right. So yeah, between the speed and how hard he hits the ball. So I think long-term, I think he's a good acquisition in dynasty and keeper leagues because there's still this, you know, good plate discipline, good contact, hits the ball hard, you know, young enough to make the change. But in redraft leagues, no, I don't know that I'm necessarily running out to get him.
Yeah, gotcha. And Chris, I know, again, it's been a little bit since you talked, buddy. We'll get you in here. I know there's at least one guy that you're in on, one guy you're out on.
Yeah, so Jesse Winker has really moved up on my radar. I mean, we know he's riding a hot streak right now, but, dude, he is just killing the ball right now. I mean, all of his Baseball Savant page is just really red, other than strikeout rate. But, man, 350 average right now. 487 OBP, 700 slug. Dude, he's just killing the ball. And I think it's legit. Like, his exit velocity is up over 5 miles an hour. And I know that really hasn't stabilized yet, but all the numbers just, I mean, they really kind of back what he's doing. I mean, his walk rate's way up, strikeout rate is up, but I mean, it's definitely encouraging that he's walking more. And so I don't know. Am I right to be buying into Winker long term? Like, I was in on him last year, but then he kind of bust, and
he's barreling the heck finally out of coming ball out right now. I think that's kind of like what I think a lot of it's being driven by the quality of contact as well. But there is, again, I looked at him, he didn't really have much of a swing change from what I saw. He did almost have like a Rizzo-esque, like he leaned back when he had the bat. Like, that was kind of, I think, a newer little thing he added. I can't really tell from last year's tape. I've been trying to watch a lot of tape on these hitters because I'm trying to find ways to buy in beyond the Statcast. And like I said, I kind of added this little lean to it. Maybe he's seeing the ball well. I'm personally buying in on it because this was what we were hoping he'd grow into. And yeah, he had a down year, but then he turned around and he's having the year we expected him. Now, obviously, is he this good? No, he's not going to hit 350, but the power is legit. He could be, I'd say, I mean, he's had XBAs 278 or better the last 3 years. So obviously a 275 hitter is not out of the question, and a guy who could return a lot on his investment at this point, and he already has, but he's a guy that I totally can see sticking as long as he just keeps playing every day. He wasn't playing against lefties initially. Now he's playing every day, which is great to see. He's hitting in the middle of the lineup as well, which is stuck. So as long as he keeps producing, I mean, I'm buying into him this year and going forward. I'm just afraid to see how inflated it might be. Cause again, he's kind of my point is, I guess he's kind of showing like all the people who never lost faith. Hey, I'm still here. I'm still this guy. And now how much is that going to drive up his price next year? That's to be determined. But you know, what is your take on Winker?
Yeah, I'm all in. I really liked him early on because I saw a guy who had good contact skills and developing power. And I was just hoping they'd play him every day eventually. It's really also instructive here to look at the fact that it looks like he's having one of the worst ground ball rates of his career. But if you actually look at the Statcast stuff, he's improved his launch angle over last year. He's improved his barrel rate. So when he hits the ball hard, he hits the ball in the air. So I think that I'm not buying the 350 batting average or anything, but I'm buying most of his improvements, and I really like him. I think it's a great name to bring up. I was definitely somebody I was looking at just now.
And his pull rate, it's actually 10% higher than it's pretty much ever been, which can help generate that power that we're seeing. Because if he's obviously hitting more ground balls, it might be because he's topping the ball more, which, no, he's not, actually. I'm surprised. Never mind. There goes that idea. But
he's hitting the ball harder than he ever has, and he's pulling it. That means he's pulling in the air. And pulling in the air, exactly. That's gold.
Especially in that park, period. I mean, any park with his power, but that park, you can get away with a few cheapies. But who's someone you're down on, Chris?
Yeah, it's got to be Andrew Benintendi. And I know he's probably played hurt most of this year. I mean, we know he's on the IL now, but he's just been trending the wrong direction for a couple of years now. And this year just kind of solidifies it. Like, definitely out in like dynasty leagues. Like, if you own him, like, what can you do? You can't really sell this low on him. So you're kind of stuck with him. But I just don't want to have any Andrew Benintendi on my team right now. The good thing, his value may be so low next year. He's probably going to give you a good return on investment because I'm imagining his ADP will be pretty low, but again, the name value could keep him up. But dude, just everything looking at it is just trending in the wrong direction for him and not looking good for the long term for Benintendi, who was a guy that I thought would be a perennial like 2020 guy with solid batting average. So,
and the sprint speed has just really fallen off. Sprint speed doesn't age that well anyway, but like, his in particular, I don't know what it is. He's just really, his athleticism has really fallen off. And then beginning this year, maybe he was hurt, but in terms of what was happening at the plate, it just looked lost. I mean, he was swinging at stuff way outside the zone and not swinging at stuff right down the pipe. And he had these weird things where he had like a 18% walk rate and like a 25% strikeout rate. And you're like, this is not you, man. Like, just like get aggressive and start, swinging at stuff, that's anywhere close and you'll get that natural hit tool going again. But he looked lost and hurt. And it's way too much of a fitting into the rest of the trend, I think, to kind of just say, oh, it's just bad luck or whatever.
It's aggravating because he's only 26. Like, I had to look up his age. He's only 26. He just turned 26.
He'll have another good season. Yeah, I think you could be right, too, that, like, next year, it just depends on how far he falls because Boston has a little bit of that New York vibe where people think, their best players are really good. He's got the name value. Some people might think he'll still steal bases. If I bought him next year, I'd buy him as, like, a 280 hitter that might hit 20 homers,
Yeah.
And hope that I got him real low and just he was like my fifth outfielder or fourth outfielder or something and I didn't spend much on him.
If he falls around that Verdugo price of like 200 where Verdugo was going initially, like a 200th overall pick, that would make sense because that is pretty much what you just described is Verdugo and their teammates. So and he offers maybe that 10 steal, 15 steal like ceiling. So that will be appealing to people in leagues, but we'll see because hey, with him, it's been a lot of tinkering with his batting stance. He changed it midseason 2019. He changed it again coming into this year, I think. And he hasn't been, like you mentioned, that comfort, that level of comfort's not there. When you see somebody tinkering that much, you know they're obviously not feeling whatever's going on in their mechanics or whatever. And you can speak to that more than most of us because you get a chance to talk to all these players. And there's a mental aspect of this game that a lot of us as fantasy analysts don't see or get to talk to players about. We don't hear about. But I'm sure you've experienced or talked to players about it, right? That there's this mental aspect that we just don't ever hear a lot about.
Yeah, I have a piece that I wrote with Brandon Moss where you can really see how players think. I recommend checking it out if you want to know like what a struggle looks like. Because I talked to Brandon Moss in one of his last years in Oakland, and he had a hole that everyone knew about, and he was like up and away, like everybody knows it's my hole, and I'm trying to spin on it. I've tried to get my bat to it. I've tried to move closer to the plate. I've done this, I've done that. And it's just killing me. And he's just like really, really honest about like his thought process and what he's going through. And then the whole time Adam Dunn is in the background just clowning on him. That's awesome. So it was my favorite interview of all time. But I think it is difficult. And I think that's part of the reason why a player in season might be someone like Benintendi. In season, you might be like, oh, I'm just going to wash my hands of this because it's just such a mess and it's just going to be a downward spiral. Whereas maybe next season you change it. You're like, you have to remember not to kill anyone off. Everybody has a price, right?
Yeah.
Like if you hate Benintendi this year, that's fine. But next year, don't just be like, I'm never drafting Benintendi again. He totally tanked my team. No, you got to come back at it again and be like, what if he spent the off season at Driveline or some other place and he revamped his swing and he's feeling really good and he lost 10 pounds or he gained 10 pounds, whatever it is. And he just like, you know, cleared the air and came to spring and started raking. He might have a really good season again. So I try to remember that when a player burns me. It's like, you know, every new season is a new season. Let's forgive everybody their sins against our fantasy teams in the past.
So hard.
And if there's something we like about it, if there's something we like about this player, we can get back on the horse.
I got you. So before we get out of here, because I don't know if you saw, I'm going to just be straight honest. My power flickered because there's a storm here. And yeah. And
I'm going to get out of here before we lose the whole thing.
Yes, well, I don't know how it didn't just shut off, but I'm not going to argue the results. Before we get out of here, Eno, first off, thank you so much for your time. But we got to talk about beer and sandwiches. You do, like, we see them all over Twitter. You talk about it. Right now, do you have a go-to beer, or do you have like an all-time favorite beer that you just always stick to no matter what? And of course, the sandwich question is the same thing. What's your go-to sandwich?
The go-to sandwich is easy. It's the BLT. I like to put in avocado. I just like that because it adds a little bit more moisture to what can sometimes be dry. But with that, you have crisp, you have salty, almost everything I like. I do like to put sweet in my sandwiches. So when I start getting weird, there'll be something sweet in there.
What would be something weird, like honey or something? Like
how sweet? Yeah, one of my favorite things to do is a honey sriracha mayo.
Ooh.
So just throw all those things together, mix them together, and you get sweet and spicy in the same thing. Right now, what's interesting side effect of the COVID crisis in California is that they changed the rules when it comes to beer, and now you can get beer delivered to you from a brewery. And so breweries can ship direct. So I just got a full box of Pliny for President. Pliny the Elder is a famous Russian River India Pale Ale that's just it's very piney and dank. But Pliny for President, I think they double dry hopped it and gave it a little bit more aroma and just put a different new spin on it. And it's in cans, and so it's much more on trend. I've got a fridge full of it. I got a nice sunny weekend coming. I hope the fires, we have some fires out here. I hope the fires calm down so I can go outside and breathe without worrying for my health.
Yeah, but, no kidding, man. I'm glad you're doing well. I'm glad you're safe, and I'm glad you were able to join us. So again, Eno, do you have anything as far as work coming out or anything? I know you release stuff pretty frequently.
I'm working on a thing about the Topps art cards. You might have seen those.
Oh yeah.
There's some fun stuff going on there. I'm also working on something about the Cardinals and a possible sort of team-wide problem with breaking balls. Hopefully nobody takes that and steals it. Working with Mark Saxon, so we'll, even if somebody does it, we're gonna come with the quotes and come with the data and do a big piece on that, because nobody sees fewer fastballs generally than the Cardinals. And Dylan Carlson got the same treatment where he saw no fastballs for the first couple weeks. And so I think he'll adjust. I believe in Dylan Carlson. I don't know if it's going to happen this year or next year. You see, I always trend a little keeper dynasty, you know?
No, and so, that's fine. Like, that brings a different twist to things. Cause
I'm definitely getting Dylan Carlson in keeper leagues. Yeah.
Cause people, I think a lot of people are skeptical on him too, because he came out of nowhere last year. in a lot of people's minds.
Yeah, so no, I think in the keeper league, the fact that Joe Adell and Dylan Carlson had bad starts is a good thing. It's a time to acquire. I think Adell's strikeout rate will calm down too.
Yeah, and I remember hearing on your Rates and Barrels podcast that you have a team with both of them on there. That redraft team though.
that was a bit of a gamble. And I don't think it's working.
A little bit of a slow start-ish or middle.
I used like 80% of my fab to get both of them. So whoops.
Well, I mean, it could pay
Come
off.
On, guys.
Yeah, it could pay off. I mean, I'm trying to be nice. I don't know what to expect, to be honest, because rookie blues happen and then the shortened season is heightened. But as always, again, appreciate you joining us. You know, you can follow Eno on Twitter at EnoSaris. It's very simple. Of course, check out The Athletic. Check out Rates and Barrels. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm Mike, obviously. I can't even say my name. Mike_Kurland. Chris is at Roto Clegg. We appreciate you listening, and we will talk to you soon.